Maybe I'm in love with you. I say maybe. Maybe I'm in love with you. You put your arms around me. I'm in love with you.
Good afternoon. You've got Living Writers on WCBN FM Ann Arbor. I'm T. Hetzel. Today, Steve Hughes is here in the studio. Steve, thanks for coming down to talk today.
Hi, T.
It's good to see you again.
It's good to see you, too.
This is show number two.
Show number two, right? That's right. It's been about 6 years or something.
It's been a handful of years or more, mm-hmm. which is crazy to think about. But it's great to see you again.
And, good to see you.
And to see the new book out this month with Wayne State University Press, Collected Stories. Short stories. By Steve Hughes here, and it's Stiff is the title. We've got a brightly colored rooster on the cover.
It's a very brightly colored rooster,
and the rooster sort of makes parts of the rooster are within the chapters.
That's right. His little feet or head appears or
some wings or something.
Yeah.
And I should say we've got Stephanie behind the glass, and in our studio audience, we're happy to have Logan today. And thanks to everyone for tuning in to listen. So glad to have you here, Steve. But without further ado, I'll read your bio, and then
okay.
We'll get talking.
Sounds good.
And happy early Thanksgiving, everybody. Steve Hughes is the writer and publisher of Detroit's longest-running zine, Stupor. His collection, Stupor, A Treasury of True Stories, 2011 Stupor House, is available at stuporzine.com. He is the creator of the Good Time Writer's Buffet, a literary series which runs out of the Public Pool, a neighborhood art space in Hamtramck. His fiction has appeared in Fence and a Detroit anthology and many smaller off-the-grid publications. He is the recipient of a 2010 Kresge Literary Fellowship and two grants from Knight Foundation, one in 2013 for his literary series and another in 2015 to fund, 2013 for the literary series and another in 2015 to fund his work in Stupor. You can't win all the awards in 1 year, right? You got to let other people get them sometimes, Steve.
Yeah.
Hughes lives in Hamtramck, where he continues to collect stories at local watering holes for forthcoming issues of Stupor. So 2011 it was when we last talked.
I think it must have been 2011 or 2012. It was right around then.
Around there, those years.
Yeah.
Well, welcome back.
Thank you.
How exciting to have Stiff out in the world. What's it been like so far? Because you've got an upcoming event here in Ann Arbor next week.
That's right.
November 28th at Nicola's Books,
mm-hmm.
7 p.m.
7 p.m.
Westgate Center.
Mm-hmm.
What was the launch like? Tell us a little bit about what's been happening
with the
stories.
Yeah, the launch was a lot of fun. We did it at the Outer Limits Bar in Hamtramck, or the Outer Limits Lounge, and it was... we had a great crowd. We had food and we had karaoke afterwards, which was fun.
Do you have a song? Is that...
Well, the girls and I, my girls were there. I've got a 14-year-old and 11-year-old, and they and I went up and we did the Bohemian Rhapsody.
Oh, very nice. Very timely.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's my song, actually. It's the one I always do. So this movie is just coincidental.
Right. It's just...
So. So we did that together. It was a lot of fun. The girls are, they get up there and do it. So
belt it out.
They belted it out. Yeah,
yeah.
They did. For sure. So it was a lot of fun. I read a story and my publicist came, which really surprised me because she's in Chicago.
Shout out to Cheryl.
Yeah, because she made it. She drove all the way. Well, she didn't drive. She took the train all the way out. I didn't know she was coming. She just showed up, walked in the door. And it's been about 11 years, not 11, no, it's been about since 2011 since I've seen her, too.
Oh.
So it's been a long time. It was a great
what
surprise.
What a great surprise, yeah.
Yeah.
What a night.
It was a great night.
What a night.
Yeah.
And folks can also head to your website.
That's right. Yeah, I made a new website for the book.
I think it's stevehughes.com, isn't it?
No, I tried to get that.
Okay.
stevehugheswriter.com.
Ah, well then, there you
it's
go.
Close.
That's good.
It's I guess Steve Hughes is owned by someone else. There's a comic out there from Australia. named Steve Hughes.
Ooh.
A heavy metal comic. I can't compete with him.
At least
for internet stuff like that.
At least he's doing good things with the name.
Yeah.
Right? Like if he sounds pretty good.
Yeah. It's not like, he's a metal comedian. I don't know.
What could be
funnier? I don't know.
Absolutely nothing. Absolutely nothing. Tell me a little bit about the stories. Like how long has this group of stories been in the making, and what was the first one?
The first one is actually the first one in the collection, which is a story.
Oh, well, we can't say the full title on air. I should say to everyone, definitely go out, grab a copy of Stiff, whether it's at Nicola's or Literati or your local bookshop or online, whatever your preference. But definitely support your local bookshops. Steve and I had to talk about the FCC because the book there's quite a few. There'd be some violations ahead if we just willy-nilly.
So like, I'm not going to just read willy-nilly here, but I will say the title is Lucky, and then we can't say that word, Day.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's the lead story in the book.
Yeah, it is.
So it's setting the feel or the tone, or why did you choose it for first? Because it wasn't just because it was the one that came first in the world, but...
Well, it was the one that came first in the world, but it was also, I guess, you know, that actually the press thought it would be a good starter story because it had a little more punch to it, I guess, than another story that I thought might be. I thought maybe Her Walls, Not Mine was the one I originally had at the beginning. And it was just for this certain flow that I was trying to attain. But they liked this particular one better, the Lucky Day story.
Yeah.
And so, I like all the stories quite a bit in the collection. I don't have a story that I think is a dud or anything like that. So moving them around and changing them around to change the flow of it was fine with me.
It didn't feel wrong at all.
No. You know, this good story is going to be somewhere else, you know, and the other good story will be somewhere else. I don't know. Her Wall's Not Mine moved a couple back and this one moved up and...
And is Christine, because I should say thanks to Christina Stonehill as well for sending a copy.
Yeah, Christina works at the press there. She's a marketing or does something in marketing there. Not sure exactly what her title is, but.
But then you worked with someone else at the press to talk about the ordering.
Well, the acquisitions person, Annie Martin, was the one who decided or suggested that maybe the stories should shift around a little bit. But that was really the only shift.
How did Lucky Day start? What was the origin for you? Like, did you hear? You work a lot in the first person. So I wanted
it's
to
all
talk
in the
about
first
that
person,
today.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so this story.
Do you hear a voice or like the voice of the main narrator? Or?
Yeah, I do. You know, in all of them, this story started off as a stupor story. So, and actually, I published it as a stupor story.
Could you say a little bit more about stupor? Because when you were here in 2011, 2012, we talked about stupor.
Right. All we talked about.
And it was great, as I recall.
It was great. Yeah, so Stupor is a zine that I've done for almost 25 years. I started in 95, and it is each issue is a collection of stories from people I get at bars or meet at bars, and so that's evolved a lot too, and so now I go into bars with my collaborating artist. I take a video camera in. And I tell the folks there, I actually talk to everybody in the bar with my video camera, and I say, I'm collecting stories about whatever theme it is. This last theme in the last issue here, which I have, which is titled All Dressed Up and Nowhere, it was the theme was costume, and it connects to the work of the artist that I was collaborating with. So Bridget Michael, her work is, she's a performance artist, and she does a lot of work in costume. So she becomes other people, you know, and performs. And so we collected stories from folks with the video camera. And then those stories become the transcript for, I take that, the transcript from the stories, and that becomes my rough draft for a stupor story. So then I revise and write that story, and it becomes something different than what was actually told to me, but I kind of like employ the elements of fiction and create a very tellable story. And I'm the whole time I'm like searching for some sort of truth that's in it, and then finalizing it, finishing it. When this one was done, and also the one before, it was performed at the Planet Ant. Are you familiar with the Planet Ant? So they did monologues from each of this issue and the one before it. And that was really, that was just in October 6, I think. It was great. So
Planet Ant.
Planet Ant, yeah.
That's a great name.
Yeah, it's a Hamtramck Theater Company. And they have been around for, I guess, probably as long as Stupor, since about 95. Yeah.
Such a strong community for the arts and
it
in
is.
Hamtramck.
Yeah, I'd say it is. It's getting stronger in a way. Like Planet Ant has expanded. They bought the building across the street. Used to be the Taj Mahal restaurant. And built a bar in there. And then they have a stage next door to that, a large staged area that is used to be like a party hall of some sort.
So many great spaces then.
Yeah.
To use and transform and have multiple shows or installations or.
Yeah, for sure. And so they performed the last issue of Stupor and the one before. But back to the story there in the book. So I started off with a story that I had gathered from somebody at the bar. And then this is different. You know, I mean, I published it as a stupor, but it
so
has.
So could I just ask a clarifying question?
Yes.
So when it's in Stupor, because you've got the transcript that you use as your rough draft, but then when it appears in Stupor, it's already fictionalized, it's already shaped, it's already become its own story.
Right.
So do you keep those now that you've started with video? Are those collected stories going to live somewhere so that that person's story is also out there too? Or will they always, I don't know, is the video more for you to go back to for essence or tone or something when you're fictionalizing it?
Yeah, the video is really just for me to create a transcript of what they're saying. And so I don't, like, I think of it as a private thing still, you know.
The people's stories.
Yeah, they're still anonymous. Like, I don't want to expose anybody's, you know, identity because they wouldn't want maybe this to be told. But for some reason, they're telling me anyway. Probably it's because they're at the bar and, you know, had a couple of drinks.
Right.
And we're all having a good time. And then they just start talking. But they know, you know, they're on film.
Right.
So it's not like
it's very clear, you know, what's happening and that you're collecting it.
Yeah, I'm not being sneaky or anything.
That's the last thing Steve Hughes is, I think, is sneaky.
I don't want to be sneaky.
We're going to take a short break. Then we'll come back and let's talk about Lucky Day.
Okay, sure.
Here on Living Writers, Steve Hughes in the studio today. His short story collection, Stiff, on the table with us out with Wayne State University Press now. We've got Steph behind the glass, Logan in the studio audience. I'm T. Hetzel, and we'll be back.
Cheetah with a hat full of napalm. I'm the runaway son of the nuclear A-bomb. I am the world's forgotten boy, the one who searches and destroys. Mommy, daddy, help me, please. Somebody gotta save my soul. Baby, detonate for
Welcome back. If you're just tuning in, I'm glad you did. You've got Living Writers. I'm T. Hetzel. Today, Steve Hughes is here. We've been talking about Stiff, just out this month with Wayne State University Press Stories. We've also been talking about Stupor and the latest issue, All Dressed Up and Nowhere, which is such a great, great title. And people can order the zine also on your website, right?
They can, yeah.
SteveHughesWriter.com.
Yeah, there's a link there to my Etsy site. It's basically on Etsy.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And then also a link to buying a copy of Stiff or at Wayne State University Press.
Yeah, or any of the big bookstores or any of the, hopefully the little indie places have it now, you know? I'm not sure how long it takes them to get it out, but I think they have to order it.
Well, call your local indie place and get some copies.
Please order
on the
it.
So thanks for picking the songs for today.
Yeah.
Can you talk about why this is a good one to lead off with?
Okay.
Because it's also leading off the book.
That's right. Yeah. The Search and Destroy, it's Iggy and the Stooges there. And it's the epigraph for my book. James Osterberg wrote those words, who is Iggy. And just the last little bit as the song was trailing off there, the words that were sort of like just disappeared were, honey, gotta help me, please. Somebody gotta save my soul. Baby, detonate for me. And then he goes, oh. So that's my epigraph. And I love Iggy, and I love the phrase there, and I like the sort of, you know, the desire for help and the what needs to be helped. What he needs help with is saving his soul. But then the next line is so strange because it's baby detonate for me. So is that how he's going to be saved through this detonation? And what is that? Is that some sort of sexual thing or what is that? But anyway, I felt a connection to it, and I felt like it fit with a lot of the stories in the book. This sort of urgency and need and desire and
surprise
searching too.
Yeah.
Search and destroy. But I guess it fits with that too. It is search and need and then the destruction. But my characters aren't getting destroyed in this book, but they are searching and trying to figure out their lives.
And it's great you've got Iggy here because local son as well.
That's right. He's Ann Arbor, Ypsilanti, Detroit, you know. It's important to the area, and it's important. He was an important voice for me in growing up, you know, around here. And just like, I've always thought he was really super cool. He is. And I've just been a huge fan of the Stooges, you know, Fun House and Raw Power, just like really amazing records. So, you know.
Have you seen I think it's on Instagram, but the video with his bird?
No.
It's really quite sweet. I'll send you the link, Iggy and his bird. I think I'm forgetting the bird's name right now, which is crazy because it's the bird's Instagram.
Okay.
Anyway.
Now, did you get the pictures that I sent you?
Yes. Of Rosabelle.
That's
and Roger.
Right. That's right. Yeah.
I got one picture.
Oh, right.
And it's on the Instagram. So everyone can head to @LivingWriters to see a very shy cat and dog and Steve Hughes. Everybody's looking down and to the left. It looked like you had choreographed it. And
no, we were struggling to get those pictures taken. And so there's a lot of just pictures of the struggle in the kitchen there.
Right.
Me trying to hold the dog and the cat at the same time. They're both very nervous about it for some reason. I guess because I don't usually get down on the floor.
And you've got them both, like, and the dog seems to be in a headlock. The cat is...
It wasn't intentional, but yeah.
And you're the only one that's sort of blurry in the photo because I think you're the one having to do all the wrestling.
I was struggling. Yeah. They were probably fine, but by that point.
Well, anyway, I feel like it makes, I'm glad, but I feel like it makes the book's release this month, it's dog approved and it's cat approved right now. That's
all
what's
right.
going out into the
And
the
rooster
universe.
Approved.
And rooster approved. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. You weren't born in the year of the rooster, were you?
Boy, I have no idea.
Your Chinese astrology?
I think it was some, you know, unremarkable animal that I was born in the year of. I don't remember.
No.
I mean, it seems like I'd remember the rooster or the rat or something like that. I'm not either one of those. I don't know. Maybe I'm like a horse or something.
Or maybe you're a dragon. Maybe you got super lucky.
Oh, man, that would be
that
something,
would be,
huh?
Yeah, auspicious. But wait, back to Stiff. Because
okay.
We only have so much time.
All right.
But everyone remember also next week at Nicola's, 7 p.m., November 28th, you can go for a reading and a signing and see Steve Hughes and Stiff.
I hope you can come.
It's weird with Lucky Day.
Yeah.
We have, I don't know, I don't want, it's like spoiler alert or so, but so this. What I would say is that most of the narrators are very unusual throughout each of the stories. The first narrator, I don't know, what do you feel like saying
about the
character?
I think we can just pretty much say he has a pumpkin head.
Yeah.
And that's a troublesome thing, I guess, maybe as you're figuring it out, you're like, what is going on here? Why does he have to get his head carved? But his girlfriend carves his face and kind of, and he's like, why, you've done it wrong, you're gonna tip my wife off, you know, now she's gonna, I'm gonna come home and she's gonna realize somebody's been messing with my face, I've been recarved, how, of course she's gonna know. So he's having an affair, the pumpkin head, with a normal woman
and who has like not a very,
she's not real thrilled with him either.
Which
they
seems...
had a fling. She's dumping him.
So. It's such a bad way to go, like carving into someone.
It's terrible.
I guess that's what it feels like sometimes, doesn't it?
Yeah. There's some things about that story, though, that are taken from, like, you know, like living in Hamtramck. It's a Hamtramck story. So the axle factory is right down the street. Around the time they wrote that story, the axle factory was closing. And it totally changed the city, having the land. I mean, they tore down their building shortly after they closed. There was people. There used to be just like carts shooting around, like golf carts, people driving around from one factory to the other. It's across the road there. And then I guess even to make it worse, there was a long strike, like a couple, well, not super long, 3 months or something. And they broke the workers down, and then like a year later, they just closed the shop and left. So it was, this is American Axle.
Oh.
Yeah.
So it's like completely breaks someone's, like the spirit or soul, and then leave anyway.
Right. And they did. They did that. And so this is like 2008, maybe 2007, all that happened. And then... that's right around the time the recession happened too. So we're all kind of like struggling out there. Bars are starting to close because there's not, the factory workers aren't, you know, getting off work and going there. Like they used to be open at 7 a.m. You go to the bar in Hamtramck, 7. And
well, there's different shifts and
right. The night shift or the graveyard shift, whatever it is, you know, they get off then or 6:30 or whatever, 7 a.m, they're at the bar.
Gotta unwind.
Yeah, they got to go home. Their lives are just set up a little different than ours. So, so that ended. The bars started being just like they were empty a lot of the time and started closing. And so it was sort of that, you know, it's bad economic times. And then this great thing happened on the highway where an armored truck like was driving down I-75. And its back door popped open somehow, and a big bundle of $100 bills just like blew up on I-75, and it caused just like total chaos.
I love this story.
Everybody's getting out of their cars and, you know, weaving through traffic, picking up the $100 bills, and so the character in the story gets a $100 bill. He happens to be on the highway at the time. goes back into Hamtramck, and you know, but it's like it's on the news and everything. Mm-hmm.
And he goes to a bar.
He goes to a bar that this, you know, would have been full normally, and there's just like barely anybody there. But yeah, that was so that was sort of, you know, the events in time that were, you know, real, that were connected to that story.
So, and you said when we were first starting to talk in the beginning of the program about how this was actually first published in Stupor.
Yes.
So this was one of those, a story that you collected and then you fictionalized.
Mm-hmm.
Is it? And I know it was
There's parts, but
what was the part that was real? Definitely the pumpkin head.
Yeah.
But
I don't remember, actually. It was so long ago. But I would say that this one is sort of an unusual Stupor story because it may have been like I just started writing longer stories because the Stupor stories were all very short, maybe like a page or less, and still are usually about a page. Some of them are two pages, but that's too long almost for a Stupor story. So this one here was kind of an experiment. I was doing something different, and I made like a single issue out of it because it was too long to be like, you know, a story in Stupor. It would have like dominated the whole thing. It was kind of an experiment at the time. And it ended up being just one of these little like accordion fan fold things. And I think it's still for sale for like a buck or whatever on my Etsy site. I don't know. Tries to dig it off there, but
so you're still, the Stupor is still going.
Like, yeah.
25 years strong. And why, like, what do you believe about the power of zines? Like, why zines matter? I would say even more now, even in like where we can share so much content online.
Mm-hmm.
But this zine is a real artifact, is a physical object.
It's super nice to have something that you can hold in your hand, yeah, and actually, yeah, read from instead of, yeah, having something online. But I think the great thing about zines is just that they're so personal and that anybody can do them, anybody can start one, and it can be about absolutely anything at all that they want. And Stupor, for me, really evolved. It changed and, you know, it started as one thing. I mean, and then it was like, well, what do I want to do next with it? And what could it become? And it really has evolved a lot. So, I mean, with a grant, too, it involves video and now this, it's the more elaborate collaboration, which is really fulfilling and great. So it's just like you can make your own stuff happen. And I guess that's what the best thing about it is.
And would you say if someone was starting now, is there also a way besides, like, I guess it used to be that you'd carry them around and, or not you, Steve, but anyone would carry them around in their bags and you'd sort of be handing them out, or there'd be different places where, I don't know, what's it like now for distribution? And
distribution is not,
or
like,
community, maybe.
Yeah,
community would be the better word for it. I think
it's certainly like the way I've done it, it really is a community effort. Like, it really is a Hamtramck zine, you know, where we go to the bar in Hamtramck. I'm working with a Hamtramck artist. I usually will write an essay about her or him, and then I make the video. And so I'm really sort of trying to discover what this artist is about and what they're doing. And then once I've got it, you know, what they are about, then we create the theme for their issue. We go to the bar and then after we, you know, write it, that artist lays it out, we go and do a release party that kind of then presents it back to the community. So there's this sort of like circular movement to it, or flow to the zine. And it's been especially super great having Planet Ant involved. It's like, man, it's like my dreams come true, like sitting in the audience and watching people perform it. And it's so cool. Yeah, they're really quality actors. They're super good. So,
Let's take a short break and
okay.
Then we'll come back. When we come back,
right.
Steve, would you mind reading from Stiff so we hear some of
sure.
the pros? And today on Living Writer, Steve Hughes is here. His stories, Stiff, out with Wayne State University Press now. I'm T. Hetzel, and we'll be right back. ¶¶ Welcome back. If you're just tuning in, really glad you did. You've got Living Writers on WCBN FM Ann Arbor. I'm T. Hetzel, and today Steve Hughes is here in the studio. Thanks for picking the songs, Steve. Could you tell us a little bit about?
Okay, well, so that song is a Coltrane song, but I don't know what the which one it is. I only know it's later Coltrane. It's Ascension. Oh, okay. It's from Ascension. That's what I was hoping it was. That's a pretty long piece. It's like 30 minutes or something. So it's cool.
And one of your characters was born, right, around when Coltrane was playing. And...
That's right. He was, it was more like he was born, it was like a week after Coltrane died. And so the story is connected to the saxophone. A saxophone he gets from a woman he meets at a bar who's on the skids with her ex. And he moved out and left his saxophone at home. And she was like, well, you can have it. And she didn't really know, like, what a sweet saxophone it was. It's like Selmer 4 or Mark 4 or something. It's Coltrane's saxophone. It's not actually Coltrane's, but it's the same one that Coltrane played. And so he goes up to her place and picks it up and then starts to play it. And it's, you know, he's really good at it. And she loves it. Her ex was like just into Kenny G. So this is like...
It finally sounded maybe like it was meant to sound more...
Yeah, it's a big improvement, you know, for the saxophone, and she likes it better, too. So, but then the story is pretty topsy-turvy because the character has a drug problem, and she also kind of has a drinking problem, but it's not as severe as his issue. He's a drug addict. He's a heroin addict. And... like Coltrane was. And so he's living in the Cass Corridor, and this is back when it was the Cass Corridor in like a welfare hotel. And towards the end of the story, her ex comes down to his place. He's going to retrieve his saxophone, and he gets blown away, basically, by this dude, Dexter. Dexter, who is the bass player with the protagonist of the story, just basically blows him away because he's trying to get into the apartment and yelling and making a nuisance of himself. So anyway, then Dexter goes to jail. There's problems for him, of course. And so it's sort of like the end of the story. Toward the end of the story, they're trying to figure out how to help Dexter because they actually have a case, you know, and that maybe he could be innocent. Maybe he's not. Maybe he is. But they're trying to raise money for him. So they that takes us to about where we are here in the story. So I can jump in here and start reading. Okay, so this is from Dexter's song. And this is Dexter's song. It was April, and Dexter was screwed. He was caught up in the legal system, going to prison. Probably forever. He had a decent lawyer and even a pretty good case, but the costs were out of hand. Meanwhile, I was clean still. It's not like I didn't think about it, but I kept my head down and worked through the day unmedicated. I guess it was around the end of the month when Sabrina called. She called in a favor and was somehow able to get me on the schedule at this club called Trinasov's. We set it up as a benefit to help Dexter with his legal costs. The owners agreed to pay us door, which came to about $400. It wasn't a lot, but it meant something. The room filled with Dex's old friends, some from as far back as high school. I guess word about his trouble spread quickly, and the newspaper picked it up too. I was surprised to see Bullitt in the audience. He was sitting with some big shot or whatever, whoever from New York. Only Sabrina would never forgive me if I talked to him, so I kept my distance. I just waited until the room filled, then got on stage. It was just me, solo on Selmer. I only had one song to play, but it was a doozy. I stretched it for almost 30 minutes. It was Dexter's song. I started slow and sweet, then rose way up there, right into the trusswork, hovering above the crowd and blowing like crazy, moving through major thirds, perfect fourths. Man, I was soaring, overblowing, working in circular motion, breathing but not stopping for breath, hitting those notes so hard and holding them until they softened into sweet moans. I pushed on, working my way through the harmonics, determined not to let it get away from me. I found my way right into the very core of the song, and let the melody roll from my lungs, through the reed and brass body, the horn. I shut my eyes and arched my back and blew like crazy, calling for Coltrane, that he might rise and breathe through me and float from this horn to ascend naked and new and carry me to my grave. I don't know if I ever played so well. There was just so much to say. All I know is that every note I formed, whether a squonk or scream or tender low hum, each felt like it had been there for a reason. When I was done, I found I could no longer stand. I released the Selmer from my lips and sat on the stage, completely exhausted, and listened to the strange good sound of the audience clapping.
Thank you, Steve. The strange good sound of the audience clapping.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it feels like that's a moment when the narrator is finding, like, the search has been successful. Like how you said, these characters are searching and they're searching. And it feels like that was a moment where he felt like he'd found something.
Yeah, he's trying, like, the whole story is about trying to play this song, and it's he keeps doing it, and just, like, never quite gets there on it, you know? Like, even here, it's like, this is a beautiful, beautiful moment, but after it's done, he's just not quite sure he's there yet, you know, and he's still going and playing it more. You know, there's more of the story left to read, but yeah. So, yeah, but it is a searching kind of thing. The characters are searching, trying to figure their stuff out. And so, yeah, it was a huge, like, milestone for him. Like, this book is a huge milestone for me. It really is. Super cool.
It is. How so, Steve?
Like, what is it? Having just, like, written zines for, you know, the last 22 years and been, like, coming off of that. And
which is a lot, though. This is, it's like these zines are also, it feels like a life's work.
Yeah, it's a life's work. At the same time, it's like, if you think about the kind of recognition you get for them, it's kind of, you know, it's pretty small. It's friendly and cool, but it's, you know, it's nice to be part of the community. But this is like, this is a real sort of like, I mean, it says that I guess maybe I've gotten somewhere, you know. It's like somebody appreciates what I'm doing beyond just, you know, me publishing my own work. Somebody's going to publish it for me? That's sweet. It really is exciting. I mean, I'm really thrilled about it. Yeah.
But I am too. I'm so glad. And it's a lovely book. I see, because it looks much the same as the advanced copy I see. So it's it's a book in the world.
Yeah. Yeah, I like the jacket and the cover. It's real nice too.
So this book has searching, and this feeling of, I think, was it Janet Kaufman who was saying, like, this feeling like of home, like trying to find home.
Yeah,
each of the characters.
That's part of it. Yeah, they're trying to find a place in the world where they are comfortable and can live happily. Yeah. I mean, but that's like, they're all sort of searching for that. And it's not necessarily that they're looking for a new house to live in.
Right. No, it's the feeling of home in yourself.
Right.
Or home, with yourself.
Yeah. And many of the characters are searching for that in other people too. And mostly in other people, but, you know, in finding it in someone else, they find it in themselves, you know?
Yeah. That makes me think of Big Wilma somehow.
Big Wilma. Oh, you mean,
your character. Oh, okay. Yeah, one of your, you're sure. Like, wait. Maybe I shouldn't say big. Maybe she's just Wilma. Just is not a word that goes with Wilma, I don't think. That's, which I think, is that the second story?
That is the second. Only Wilma.
I feel like there's such lovely lines within the stories here, because there's like this, sometimes there's strangeness, there's fire, there's lots of whiskey at different moments, there's barbecue, so one of the, I just to read some of them, like how the lines are working. I closed my eyes and listened to the sound of my own heart. It was beating fast. It was talking about the future. There's like these lovely moments that you create in here.
Is that like the last line in the book there?
It's close to it. It's not the exact last line. But yeah, it's that story. I'm so glad it's the final story in the book.
Yeah. Ted and his heartbeat.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, it's really connected to the fires right now in California, because this is a story that's someone told me, and then I took it, and instead of making it into a short little stupor story, I blew it way up. But the story was set, I mean, the original story was set in California, and it was that he actually burned his house down, and the character who told it, or the dude who told it, and then like some years later, his house burned again because of the fires out there. So it's sort of this terrible kind of double tragedy that has happened. But that doesn't happen in the book. The book, that's just sort of how I, like, the impetus for starting the story and writing the story and thinking about, wow, what happens, you know, to somebody who burns their house down by accident? How does that work, you know, as a teenage kid who accidentally burns their house down? It's tragic and it changed his whole life, you know, really.
And it's about sort of him figuring out who he is by also figuring out about reckoning with how he feels about Ted, who was like a possible stepfather at some point, but who's now out of his life and his mother's.
Mm-hmm. And kind of realizing that even though Ted was sort of despicable, he was really kind of a human presence too. He was, you know, not such a bad guy. He saved him.
Yeah.
So
yeah, it's true. Like he was building some crummy houses or making money off not such, maybe right. Some not so good ways. But there are worse characters in here that are definitely, I would say, like exploiting people for more, you know, than maybe Ted was. I don't know. But this is another line, like from Ted and his heartbeat. I landed in Detroit like I land everywhere, like a thrown dog. Like really just this. There's lyrical lines throughout this book. When you're writing it, how are you finding that sound?
You know, I write stupor a lot for to be read aloud. And so, and the same thing is true with the stories in Stiff. Like, really, each story was read aloud at the Good Time Writers Buffet. So I practice them, you know, aloud. When I write them, they're not finished until I stand up and read them aloud like four times or something, you know? So I'm reading them over and over. So I want to hear what they sound like and, you know, how do they feel, you know? And also, and I always tell Logan this over there at my audience, my son, it's like when you're writing, it's important to read to yourself too aloud, because your mouth's making the words. So you're, tongue is moving and you're hearing the words, and also of course you have to see the words to do it, so it's just a way of another way of I'm trying to get my brain to work as good as it can, you know. And so if I use more of my senses to write, you know, maybe it'll be a better piece. That's my hope. So that's why I always read aloud all the time when I'm working.
That's great advice. We're going to take a short break and then we'll be back to talk more with Steve Hughes. Stiff, his stories out with Wayne State University Press. Now I'm T. Hetzel. We'll be back. We'll be right back. Happy Thanksgiving. Happy, happy, happy Thanksgiving, everybody. From Steve Hughes, Stephanie, Logan, myself, everyone here at WCBN-FM Ann Arbor. We're here, we're talking, we're at nearing the end of our conversation. The time has flown, Steve. Do you want to read a little bit from the book that connects to the song, and then we'll talk some more?
Yes, I do. Okay, so I'm going to read a little bit. It's from the story Forrest Parker, Poet Laureate of Lumpkin Street, and it's about a dude with anger management problems. Anyway, I'm going to read without saying more. It's still not fair that I had to see the anger management counselor while they let my wife off the hook. Maybe he has some good ideas, but mostly, I think he's a jerk. Leaning back in his chair, flicking his pencil between his fingers, he doesn't care about me, and nothing pisses me off more than listening to him go on and on about all his tired techniques for swallowing your pride. But part of me knows that a small chunk of what he is saying is right. I am wasting my life on anger. I need to be different, entirely different. I was there sitting in his office on the last day of my sentence when I told him I'd made up my mind I was going to change my name and start writing again. He told me that was a little much. You want me to change or not? I said. I tried to make it official last Friday. I filled out the paperwork and stood in line, but it's not as easy as I thought. Well, the government won't let me do it, but I'm doing it anyway. I don't need them. I am Forrest Parker from now on. My wife thinks it sounds like a TV name. She knows I'm trying to show everyone that I am someone new, no longer the kind of jerk who might throw a six-pack through the wall and then not apologize or anything, or flip over her favorite plant and just leave dirt all over the floor and walk away when she tells me to clean it up. So the thing is, she likes a part of my plan about not being a jerk, but when I tell her about how if I'm going to be famous, well, I need to start working hard now. She starts laughing. My wife's job is to make everything seem impossible. How are you going to be a poet? You don't know anything about poetry. Name one poet. I'm racking my brain, thinking only of Slayer and all the words that Tom Araya has to memorize for every song. That's a lot of words. And I'm about to brag him up when she says I can't even spell. And aren't poets supposed to know how to spell? Well, that's a difficult comment to digest. But she's right. But isn't that like me telling her that she'll never be a good mother because she can't even cook? Everything she makes tastes the same. It's all dry and the noodles get stuck in my throat, but I would never say that. Instead of starting a fight, I go sit on the porch steps. Okay.
Thanks, Steve. Thanks. Mm-hmm. And for the Slayer.
Yeah, that's the reason for the Slayer that just got played. Pretty amazing, huh? Tom Araya. What a poet, huh?
Yeah. I love how the character is like, and that's a lot of words.
That's a lot of words, yeah.
A lot of words.
He says them fast.
So you were saying before the break that you've read all of these stories aloud and some of them at the Good Time Writers Buffet.
That's right.
And there's another one coming up December 15th.
That's right. December 15th is the next one.
And so what's the theme for this one?
Bread and Clutter is the show. And so it's...
Instead of butter.
That's right. But the show really isn't so cluttery. It's not cluttered at all. It's a pretty organized show. But all the paintings are food-based. And there's some sculpture in there. So it's a food-based writer's buffet, which will be the first. Even though we have food at every one. You know, it's a potluck. So the writers all bring food. And usually I invite five writers and ask them to bring a dish to pass. And then I'll bring something too. And then we also have 2-minute readings, which anybody who brings anything at all can read for 2 minutes. So if, someone in the community wants to come and read something, they're welcome to. And just bring a dish to pass. And there's plenty of food to eat too, which is always nice. So I like the idea of that sort of community. I think food builds community. I think eating together does. And really, the program kind of came out of wanting to have a literary community and not having one. You know what I mean?
So you made one.
Yeah, I did. Yeah. So because it was like, well, I'm a zine writer, you know? I've been writing these zines and feeling, you know, before I got the fellowship for it, I felt kind of weird about it because it felt like a kind of a weird thing for me to be doing for some reason, you know? It's really true. The fellowship was a real sort of affirmation of my work on it. And then...
Because did it suddenly feel like, oh, this is art. This is a project.
Yeah, I never thought I would get one, you know? So super cool to get it and then be like, okay. Yeah, it is. It is like, it's art. Okay, it's writing. It's worthwhile, you know? It's worth something to people. So I like that. It was great. But still felt like I didn't really have like a literary community. I went to grad school in New Orleans and I had a community down there, you know, MFA. So it was an MFA program. And so we were all pretty tight. We all moved away and I really missed that. And that was in the 90s. So I missed that for a long time. And then finally figured out around 2010, 2011, that, you know, there's ways to build community around yourself, you know, and help other people build it too, you know. So Stupor became my sort of tool for that. And then I opened the art gallery with some friends. And that became a way to show other people's work, like the people that I was working with on Stupor. And then it became a way for me to say, oh, what can we do to, like, bring writers out? Oh, we'll start up this Good Time Writers Buffet, you know? And so then the first one, I had, like, 12 writers out. I thought, we'll do 12 writers. We didn't have any food. We just had beer. And
for the buffet.
Yeah.
It's a beer buffet.
Yeah.
That is not a bad idea.
It was pretty good. Yeah, but at the same time, I was like, okay, 12 writers is too many. We were all sort of exhausted by the end of it. It was a real marathon. I think it went for like 4 hours. It was too long. And yeah, so then the next one, we pared it down to like 4, but then I've kind of got it balanced out. So 6 is a pretty good number. And, you know, they all read for 10 to 15 minutes each. And we have a break in the middle. There's a DJ that plays. So DJ plays at the beginning when we're eating food. Then the readings are, they usually go pretty quick. It's like if there's 30, 40 minutes of readings is what we usually have. And then we take a break and eat more, drink more, enjoy hanging out together, you know, meet interesting people. And then we do 3 more readings. And that kind of wraps it up, except for we still usually have beer and people stick around and drink the beer and hang out and eat the whatever food's left over. So, you know, then I can go on.
Yeah.
So it's great. Yeah. We have your sponsor now, which is cool.
Really? Who?
Axel Beer. And they're up in Royal Oak. Oh, in Ferndale, actually. Ferndale. But they have been pretty gracious and wonderful this entire year for Public Pool and Writer's Buffet. They've been super cool donating stuff.
Steve Hughes, you're doing good work. You're doing good work out in the community, in the world, between the covers here of the book that's now out in the world with Wayne State University Press. Your stories, Stiff. You're going to be reading at Nicola's next week, November 28th, 7 p.m. So folks can check that out. It really feels like it's... You have a deep belief in art.
I do.
And the passion for it.
Mm-hmm. I sure do. Yeah. I love art. And artists. They're great.
Writers.
And writers.
And bars. A good place.
Yeah.
To get some stories.
It's a good place to get stories. And yeah, people are all kind of hanging out there for a similar reason, too. They want to meet people and are kind of like reaching out in some way.
And maybe trying to find ourselves, right?
Potentially so, yeah.
Well, happy Thanksgiving.
Yeah, happy Thanksgiving to you.
A happy Thanksgiving to everyone listening out there. Thanks for being with us today. Thanks to Logan for being in the audience. Thanks for Stephanie behind the glass.
Thanks, Stephanie.
Thanks to Christina Stonehill for sending Stiff. Again, Steve Hughes will be reading at Nicola's next week, 7 p.m., November 28th. Thanks to Frank Uly for post-production on the show for Living Writers website. So check out the website for an archive of the episodes. Follow us at Living Writers on Instagram and Twitter. Thanks, everyone, for listening. I'm T. Hetzel. Until next time.